This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you. Shopify is a global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real life store stage, all the way to the, hey Marge, did we just hit a million orders stage? Shopify is there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout, 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Running a growing business means getting the insights you need wherever you are. With Shopify's single dashboard, you can manage orders, shipping, and payments from anywhere. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the United States, and Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/ifanboy, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/ifanboy now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/ifanboy. This is the iFanboy Pick of the Week podcast, episode 412, brought to you by iFanboy listeners just like you. I don't feel the way I've ever felt. I know, gonna smile and not get worried. I try, but it shows. Anyone can make what I have built. And better now, anyone can find the same white pills. It takes my pain away. It's a lie. Hello, welcome to that Fanboy Pick of the Week podcast, episode 412. My name is Connor Kilpatrick, and joining me are Paul Montgomery.
Yes.
And from Medical Bay 12, calling him from his bed, is Josh Flanagan.
It's me. It is all. Why is it always me?
I don't know.
I think it's funny is that, like, I've really only had, like, two issues in however many years we've been doing this, but it feels like no time has passed. I feel like, man, remember that time I couldn't be on the show because I had an appendectomy?
I do. Well, you also had the baby. That happened as well.
Oh, yeah. There was that. Yeah, I guess. Oh, yeah.
Now you're having a baby in a different way.
A spiky sort baby. Of.
Squeeze our hand.
Tiny 4-millimeter spiky baby.
You had the appendectomy when it was your week. So me and Ron did the show last minute by ourselves. You're talking about your book.
It's the Judd Winnick Shazam book. I believe it was number 7.
That's right. That was quite fun.
Yeah. Did you read that book?
I must have. We did
the
show.
You would have. You're responsible. So. If you weren't paying attention and you don't know that, I've had some adventures in the emergency room lately. And currently, as I talk to you, I am on drugs.
He is right now. And some good painkillers from his little piece of heaven coming out of his urethra. Can I say that? Is that
you
weird?
You just did.
Ow.
So, if you've made it this far, we are a fanboy. We like comics. Every week, we read a bunch of comics. One of us picks the best book they read. We talk about it on the show. We talk about the other books that came out this week, other nonsense, all kinds of fun stuff. Before we get to the show, reminder. Yes.
I tell you something. You spend an hour or so writhing on a gurney. It doesn't take much to make you laugh.
Sure,
you're just real thrilled about that. So thank you, but also, ow, stop it.
Reminder, warning, this is a review show. There'll be spoilers, so if you haven't read your books yet, pause the show, come back. Paul, you had the pick.
Yes, I did, and I chose The Superior Foes of Spider-Man, number 5. It's the 5th book in this series.
Is it a mini?
It's an ongoing. Hmm. The storytellers, as they're credited in the book, Nick Spencer and Steve Lieber. And it's sort of the way I sort of describe it to people, it's sort of Marvel's answer to the Flash Rogues and very similar to the Hawkeye style of storytelling. Just the visual layout of the book and the sort of the tone and the sense of humor that the book has, it's very similar to. So if you're enjoying Hawkeye and if you miss the old school, and I say old school, but like, you know, 10 years ago, Flash Rogues, and the way they were handled over at DC, check out Superior Foes of Spider-Man. This particular issue opens with, they always open in an awful place. It takes place in New York City, and then the caption is an awful place or a terrible place. And this is a crook who's being interrogated by his former boss, the Owl, who's just a great design.
He's a great villain.
He's got the Wolverine hair and the chin strap beard, mm-hmm. and he eats rats. And he's dealing with a rat from his organization who's been embezzling money from him. And he tells a little anecdote about when he was working with the Man-Bull, and they had their little heist group, their little posse, and the Man-Bull. He had an affair with one of the other guy's wives, and so there's a moment where we don't see it happening, but they're reacting to what they're seeing on a closed circuit monitor, and they talk about a bull ride. So that happens, and then the larger portion of the issue, this is the Sinister Six, although there's four of them at this point. Their fifth member, they've never had a sixth member. The fifth member, the Shocker, is locked in a trunk. Somewhere, which is being towed into a lot, and they're going to break into the Owl's compound to steal Silvermane's head, because Silvermane had died, and there's a head, and this is worth something to them, and we get a great sort of two-page spread that like you would see in a Home Alone movie, where you're drawing what it looks like inside the layout of this compound, and there are giant scorpions, there's like werewolves, ninjas, all these barriers that they have to get through in order to get this object. And this wonderful interplay between the Sinister Six, the four of them, it's the Boomerang is the leader, and he's the one who locked the Shocker in the trunk of his car. The Beetle, the female Beetle, and Overdrive, who's sort of their getaway
He turns driver. Everything into a car, right?
Actually, there's some really cool stuff he does in this issue. He pulls out a toy remote control helicopter, and he touches it. And it turns into a giant assault copter.
So he overdrives the vehicle.
Previous issue, he turned like kind of an anemic looking motorbike into a pretty rad motorcycle. So he does
an odd power.
It is an odd power, and he's sort of like the Dark Stig is sort of his design aesthetic. Like he's wearing, a helmet, and it's like navy blue or black.
What he looks like? He looks like a Cobra Viper.
Yeah, and then Speed Demon, who's just a speedster kind of villain, and they can never get along, and the Beetle pulls out her iPhone and puts it on airplane mode before they go into their thing. And she's got these binders of all these plans. And I thought it was I genuinely laughed out loud reading the book. I thought it was a lot of fun. And that's like, I've been amused by comedic comic books, but it's very rare for me to actually like audibly laugh, as Josh knows. Yeah. So
I don't believe you do.
This was really refreshing. And I love like telling a story from the villain's perspective, especially if they're sort of inept. And that's very much the case here. So Josh, you've been reading this. Did you?
Yeah, I have. I think one of the things that most impresses me with this is I really like, I like Spencer's range. I like that he can sort of do this and he's done other stuff. And this is like, he found a tone and it's been consistent since the beginning and he stuck with it. And it's still like, there's still superhero action per se, if that's what you're looking for. Like the scene at the beginning with the guy tied up in a chair is like a big thing of rats is dangled over him. You know, that's creepy. That works for that. But then at the same time, like he's really got these bumbling buffoons and we just keep going with them and you're seeing all these different sides of it. But I think the thing that really makes it work, the glue is Steve Lieber, who's drawing these. You get a lot out of this issue. Like there's a lot going on here. At the end, I'm flipping through the pages, and I'm just like, man, there's just a lot happened in this. But like, there's also places where, like, Lieber's playing it really nicely. He adds this sort of really interesting awkwardness because he's not really a traditional superhero artist. He's a great storyteller. We've said that for years. Mm-hmm. But like, if you look on even just the last page where Shocker is running away with the head of Silvermane, if you look at like the kind of expression that he gave Shocker's eyes and the expression that's on Silvermane's face, like it's all just a little like I don't know what we're doing here.
Yeah, it's he draws it sort of like a crime book, like you'd think it's like it would be like a Brubaker kind of crime book, but then heightened with like really expressive comedic characters.
Yeah,
so you can have moments where so like the final sequence is Shocker like gets out of this the trunk of this car, and there's a kid who's on the lot and saying, "Are you okay, mister? You were locked in the trunk." And he's like, no, stay in school. It's all right. It's all right. And and he goes walking, and then you see Silverman's head on the top of a remote control car, like coming around the corner.
But like with a suspicious look in his eye.
Yeah. And it's and then like the look of on Silverman's the head of Silverman's face, yeah. like as, you know, like Shocker's holding him under the crook of his arm, running out of this lot. And I got to tell you, really good job with that tow truck.
Yeah.
Sometimes they really phone in tow trucks, and that's my family business is recovery services. So I was very impressed with this and the lot that they tow it into. So, yeah, I think Steve Lieber is a big part. And then I like that they credit him as storyteller along with Nick Spencer, yeah. Because so much of that, like, I'm thinking also when they're getting ready to storm the compound, and Boomerang has to remember if they turn right or left, and there's a panel where he's just sort of like orienting himself, and like he's got his arms over here, he's like, was it the left? You go in and then you make a left, or is it a right? And so, like, really good storytelling.
Yeah, the thing about Steve Lieber is that I remember a long time ago, he did
Whiteout.
Yeah.
Yeah, he did Whiteout. And I got a sketch from him a long time ago. This was back when they just sort of gave away sketches. Like, yeah, people would be like, "Oh, this sketch." I feel bad about it. Now I feel like I need to send him money. But he did one of Carrie from Whiteout, and like he drew it, and then he inked it, and then he went in with like Whiteout, and he just put so much care into this one free sketch that he was doing.
I remember he brought the brush out for that.
Yeah, and I've never forgotten that about him, that he put that much care into this, and I can see that in these pages. So Lieber is really one of those guys that whenever I see his name on a book, I'm willing to take a look at it because I know that he's not phoning it in, and he's got all these different skills. But like in this one, he's definitely mastered this sort of odd timing of comic book humor and little gags off to the side, and it's a little bit. It's reminiscent of what Aja is doing on Hawkeye, I think, but it is a different feeling. And he's got his own tricks and things going on here. It's a fun book, and I think it's one of those things like, listen, we know probably not a lot of people are going to read this or whatever. Let's just have fun with it and do good work, and that's the feeling that I get out of it, which is why I like it.
Yeah. I remember talking about the first issue and being like, I think they're trying for a Hawkeye kind of thing because with some of the like infographic kind of stuff that they were doing. But since then, I think they've expanded sort of the language of the book, and the certain things that they're doing, they're as adventurous in different ways than Aja and Fraction on Hawkeye. So, but I do think that even though it's got its own little bag of tricks, I think if you do appreciate, especially those Aja issues of Hawkeye, definitely check this out.
Yeah, great cover on this one too. Just design wise, really beautiful.
Perfect segue into Batman 25. I realize what they're doing with the cover, and from a conceptual standpoint, I like the idea of it. But it's just this is the most boring cover I've ever seen in a comic. The original, you know, part one of the story. And so then they come back to that and make it an all black version because the city's been blacked out. And I get that. And I like that. But the cover is just so boring.
It looks like very prestige, but it doesn't. I mean, other than it being a blackout of the cover, like it doesn't tell you a whole lot about what's going on. And a very very interesting issue. And I especially like the moment in here where Bruce is coming out of the Batcave, which is, and the way you get out of the Batcave in the early days in Zero Year is like you climb a rope. And I was like, wait, is Alfred going to have to
rope
do that?
Rope ladder, yeah, yeah.
and so Alfred did too. And it just so happens that Commissioner Gordon, he's not Commissioner yet. He's Captain Gordon.
He's Captain Gordon. He's Lieutenant Gordon. Lieutenant.
Right. He's just chilling outside on the grass. And he's like, so what's going on down there?
He wasn't just chilling. He was there.
He was waiting.
He's snooping around.
He's like crouched over the hole. He was like, I got this.
What's going on?
And Bruce is like, yeah, why don't you check it out? Like, we've got some stuff down there. Like, he's like, do you have like generators and stuff? There's like this noise. And he's like, why don't you go poke your head down there? And Alfred's like, boss, what are you doing? And and then like Gordon looks down and then Bruce hits a switch. He's got this like an alarm thing and all the bats come swarming out and hit Gordon in the face.
Which is mean.
His glasses off.
It's mean.
Knocks his glasses off. It's mean. It's kind of a dick move, but
look at that haircut. Of course, he's a dick.
Of course.
Well, it's like an army cut, but
because this is war.
I think that was a line from Weird Science. Anybody with a haircut like that's got to be an asshole.
Now,
he's
I know,
Chet.
I did notice a mistake in here in that in the beginning when Gordon and Bullock are investigating that crime scene with the guy whose bones turned into tree limbs or whatever that was.
Right.
He refers to Bullock as detective, but he's clearly a plainclothes cop. Mm. It's a minor thing, but I did notice that.
Yeah. It's he's definitely not a detective yet.
Anyway, it's not a problem. Just I'm just.
I can say one thing. Yeah. Dr. Death creeps me the hell out.
It's a creepy face.
It's a creepy, creepy drawing. It's the teeth.
Right. So, in this issue, the Riddler has set off his bomb that's knocked the power out of the city. They're not worried they're going to get turned back on, but they're under a bit of a time constraint because there's a giant hurricane heading their Gotham's way. But no problem. They'll get it turned back on by then. It's not going to be a problem. Don't worry about it. Of course, it's going to be a problem probably next issue. But sort of the players are getting into place for the next cataclysm, which is going to be the hurricane coming in and basically combining with the blackout and turning Gotham into a hellhole. It's going to be interesting. This was very much a move the pieces into place issue with the advent of a very creepy villain in Dr. Death.
And even as creepy as like the reveal of Dr. Death's face, like the scene where it's talking about Pamela Isley before she's, you know, Poison Ivy, talking about seeing him come in. And just he's like a dude in a hood, but it's like his fingers are too long. Like it's just a little off. I find that even creepier than like the really distorted face. Mm-hmm. When it's like something that's like just a little bit off, like not quite human.
Right.
That's really creepy. And then you get, I think that's like you see three panels of that, and then he turns his head and you see the weird janky teeth and stuff. And colors continue to be totally crazy, which I like.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, just like really saturated pinks and oranges and stuff. And I also like the backup a lot, too.
The Harper Row year one story. Yeah.
Harper Row. And yeah. Cullen, her little brother, and their sort of dick dad. I thought it was really good.
There's one more mistake I noticed.
Oh, God.
In the backup, there's a double page shot of Batman swinging and then all the sort of other heroes around him. So we see Superman from his issue. We see Green Arrow from his issue.
Right.
And we also see Nightwing from his issue, which came out this week. And in this comic, he's all red. And in his comic, he's all blue. Again, minor mistake. But
well, you could say it's a mistake in Nightwing.
Well,
it's correct,
someone made a mistake somewhere. Anyway, I did like this quite a bit.
Anyways, I've been thinking about it. I really look forward to Snyder's take on the Riddler because I feel like I know he loves the Joker, but like, if you can think of a creator and a character that are like so perfectly designed for each other, I think that's going to be really exciting.
Now, let's talk clothes. Let's talk fashion for a minute.
Okay.
All New X-Men 18. And this is the first, Amazing X-Men was the first one, but this was the first issue with the original team post-Battle for the Atom when they've left the Jean Grey school and gone off with Cyclops.
Can I ask a question? Because yeah. I didn't read the end of that. Uh-huh. In a nutshell, why did they decide to go the other way? Why are the other X-Men now the bad guys? School X-Men.
They have not really explained that.
Okay.
Well, okay.
I got that feeling.
Okay, no. Wolverine and his crew were trying to send them back in time. They didn't want to go back in time. They wanted to stay in the modern day. And Cyclops and his crew were all about, yeah, let's let them be who they want to be and not force them to go through a portal back in time. Right. I think that's for
despite
those.
Despite the fact there's all kinds of temporal problems with that.
Right, but we still don't know. It's still not entirely justified why Kitty is buddy-buddy with Scott.
Yeah.
Everybody
why
knows. That's the big one.
She didn't want them to go either.
She feels she's tight with Magic right now.
Mm-hmm.
That is clear, but I don't entirely buy that she feels betrayed by Wolverine.
On the other hand, what the result is, you've got a whole new group of people to bounce off these old X-Men, which is fun.
Yeah,
that's true.
Also, the idea that Kitty broke up with her boyfriend, Bobby Drake, left the school. Now she's hanging out with young Bobby Drake.
Right.
So it's like you got to see a smaller version of your ex-boyfriend every day. And the more annoying
That's
version
all.
Of your ex-boyfriend.
And back when she was just
that
a professor.
Has to be literally the worst thing a woman can imagine.
Back when she was at the Jean Grey school, she was also teaching young Bobby Drake. And he was like, I feel like she's being extra like difficult on me because I'm her boyfriend in the future. So it's just a new playing field for that to continue. I thought there were great character moments in this. There's a lot of like characters splitting off into twos.
Well, I like Beast with Magneto a lot. I mean, the idea that
Yeah.
Just a few weeks ago for these guys, they were fighting Magneto to the death, and now he's hanging around their headquarters.
You know, the thing about that, why is he being so creepy with the helmet walking around?
Because it's Magneto.
Like, I feel like for years he's been walking around without it, and he's like, you know, it feels like he's being extra creepy for no reason.
He enjoys it. He loves it. He's playing it up that people think he's terrifying.
Yeah.
So that's his concession to being a good guy is, I'm going to be a good guy, but you're still going to be, like, terrified of me.
I also like that the only person to show up for the meeting was Scott. They had a meeting for the original team, and he's standing there, arms folded behind him. No one else. But let's talk about the clothes.
Yeah, I was going to say, talk about the clothes.
Okay, these are awful.
Yeah, it doesn't look as bad as that first cover reveal that we saw.
Where did they keep the lions?
It's
that they form into Voltron. Where are those?
That's what they look like.
What happened to Chunk's shoes? Hunk, not Chunk.
It's Hunk. I didn't even get the Voltron thing until you mentioned said it, but that's very Voltron-y.
We try to be
positive on the show. We try to focus on what we like about comics, celebrate the good, but occasionally you have to sit down and say, no, this was a mistake.
They're not ugly. I don't think they're ugly. I just think they're kind of boring.
They're ugly and boring.
Like, it's just they're color coded now. And that's all.
You know what was rad about them? Is that they were the old X-Men.
Yeah.
And they were the old X-Men outfit, and it always let me know who the hell I was looking at. It was a great visual signifier. And also, those costumes are rad because Jack Kirby designed them. And also, they didn't really look bad.
No.
Like, they look fine. They didn't
look kind of case that they probably smell bad because they've been wearing.
Well, that's what a washing machine is for.
Yes.
They magic them up new outfits. I'm sure they can oxyclean that shit.
But also,
I agree.
You've got Kitty Pryde who says cosmetically they need to change. She's wearing their outfit.
You're right.
Yeah.
You're totally right.
This was a mistake. I'll be honest, it took about 10% of my enjoyment out of the idea of these characters being around. Because I liked them in that classic look.
I think that helped.
As Josh said, it's classic is classic for a reason. And these are the Kirby original X-Men costumes. They're iconic. Right. And they looked great in the midst of all the chaos of the modern world. They looked great in the middle of all these characters. And now they look awful.
I feel like it was a really good signifier, and it was a constant visual reminder of who these characters were and what they were doing there and why that matters. And now, like, literally, it'll be tough to tell them apart. Like, at least...
Once they form Voltron, you'll see the Voltron from miles away.
Well, right. But, you know, at the very least, Cyclops can't be that bad. Because the current Cyclops is so bad.
Right.
I mean, by comparison, this guy looks great. I'll tell you what threw me off, though. When they're doing that, the page where they went from, you know, they did the same page twice, and then you got to see the thoughts.
Yes.
Yeah. They were talking about who was talking. I thought that, I didn't realize I was looking at Beast and Cyclops because the goggles on Cyclops threw me. I was like, are we looking at two different versions? It took me a couple seconds to sort of figure it out.
Right.
Well, yeah, when they showed the cover, I really thought that, I was looking at Cyclops, but I was looking at Hank. Because orange doesn't say Beast to me.
No.
So
none of it works. And in the hands of a lesser artist, which we've seen in the covers or some of the other stuff we've seen, you know, released, they look even worse. So,
yeah, that's a good point, because this is probably the best they're ever going to look.
It's like Jim Lee drawing Superman. The least bad that costume looks.
So
I like how they have a belt buckle, but no belt.
I think it's communicator, probably. I think it's a misstep, but I'm not going to throw out the baby with the bathwater.
Oh, no,
I thought it was a great script for this issue. And
that's true.
Okay, so Cataclysm Ultimate Comics Spider-Man number one. We were talking about the Bagley craziness of the Cataclysm book last week, and I said I'm just going to follow Ultimate Spider-Man. Mm-hmm. I'm happy with that choice because I thought this was like, even though it has all the trimmings of Cataclysm, it still felt like.
Well, it's just the next issue.
Yeah. That's really what it feels like.
It should be 29.
Yeah.
So if you didn't buy this out there in listener land, if you were an Ultimate Spider-Man reader, this was just the next issue of the book.
There's just no Genki looking like a hedgehog, none of that stuff.
Yeah,
this
Marquez,
is great.
Right?
Spider-Man, yes. Spider-Woman stuff. Yeah, Marquez. That's really the story of this one, is that I think Marquez does a really great job of doing expressive characters, but also, you know, the big superhero action stuff that people love. Like, I think he's like a perfect superhero artist. He can do everything.
You can do Thor eating Chinese food.
You can do Thor eating Chinese food. So, there's great comic beats in here and stuff that, like, I want him to have drawn that Cataclysm issue from last week because it's a lot of talking heads. I still don't think that's a great issue because just the pacing was off, but I thought this was really strong, both in terms of the writing and the art. But I think the art is the real takeaway, that the characters really feel alive here.
I like that Captain America wears a Captain America t-shirt.
Captain America t-shirt. And sitting around the table.
About branding that guy.
Yeah, he's on brand. Now, yeah. I also like that Spider-Woman says, "I'm a clone of Peter Parker." And they go, "You are? How do you not know that? How would we know?" And then it's sort of like, you know.
It was classified information. And it's just like, wait, it was classified to Captain America? Like. And
there was a good scene around the table.
And this was the Captain America who was the president, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
So president, you'd think president he would Captain know Steve. About. Yeah. So
what else was classified from him is the question. What else did he not know as president? What mm-hmm. are they keeping from the commander in chief?
Yeah. Good. And you get some cloak and dagger stuff. I like Ultimate Comics cloak and dagger. They're fun.
And the Gilmore Girls in the middle.
Yeah.
It was good. It was a very good issue. I mean, we love the series. It was another very good issue of the series.
So this is basically just to say, if you were thrown off by Cataclysm last week, just stick with this stuff.
It looks like it's going to get more cataclysmic-y next time. As Galactus arrives at the very last page of this one.
That's fine. We like Galactus.
Yeah. Now, Josh, did you get to read in the midst of your writhing pain Astro City number 6?
I did. And the best part about it was as if number 5 never happened.
Yeah, exactly. But
it was all the things we liked about 4. Right?
Yeah, which was part 2. Favorite
I saw part 2 and I was like, oh no. And I was like, oh, part 2 of the good thing, not the bad thing.
Right. This was one of my favorite issues so far. I really like this character, this main guy. You know, he's sort of the mob boss of the docks. He runs the river and the docks. And so that he goes to shake down the creature who appeared in the first issue, who's, you know, observing Earth. He goes
the balls on this guy.
He tells us he's got to have to pay up if he wants anything delivered to his spaceship. And I just love the character of this. What is his name? The creature or the alien? Celestial. We'll call him a Celestial. Because that's what he looks like. I love
the ambassador.
I love his characterization. He's kind of like childlike, but not in a annoying way. Just kind of in a, this is fun. I'm observing you guys, and this is all very cool kind of way. I just like it was a very different kind of characterization.
It's like he got this job, and it was like his promotion, and he's like way into it because he doesn't really know about, you know, all the other crap that goes with the job. That he's like, no, I'm out here. I'm on my own. I'm doing a good job here. I'm meeting all these interesting people.
Yes.
And he's going to be screwed.
Yeah, I liked it a lot. I liked the main guy, too. He was interesting.
Yep.
It was a really, really good issue.
Yeah, it was. It was, I have nothing else to say about it.
Yeah,
it was very good. It was one of those things that Kurt Busiek does best, which is to peel back a corner. Well, what happens with this? You know, wait, so is there like a mob presence? Is there a sort of, and mob, it's sort of mob union kind of thing that happens in city.
He's the crime boss's guy on the docks.
Yeah.
I also really liked, I thought this was a really strong Brent Anderson issue.
Really?
I thought the art was really strong in this.
I thought it was a little loose with the ink. But maybe not in a bad way.
I like that bit. I like that part. I like the texture it brought to it.
I like how he's married to a Uhura stripper.
That's what I thought. Lieutenant Uhura, the former stripper.
Yeah, that's nice.
Really good. Really good issue. So now, real quickly, if you want to help the show out, you can go to fanboy.com/Amazon. That's all the more important this time of year as you make your holiday purchases. And I know that a lot of you are out there making your purchases through Amazon for the holidays. Use the fanboy.com link. Go to fanboy.com/Amazon. Click the Amazon button there. It'll take you to amazon.com. And you can use that URL as your bookmark in the future. And as you make all your holiday purchases, it really helps us out. Keeps all the bills covered. Keeps the lights on. Keeps Josh and Vicodin. And
I was going to say, if you want to buy some extra stuff now, that would be fine.
Yeah.
Because
Josh has got some bills that he needs help on. So the point is, as the holidays arrive, and I know I do a lot of my holiday shopping on Amazon, I always use the iFanboy link and help myself out. So, you know, I can't do it all myself. So please do what you can. It doesn't take any money out of your pocket. It takes it out of Amazon's giant pockets. And yesterday I almost couldn't park because it was an Amazon Fresh truck blocking my spot. But check that out. Also, go to iFanboy.com/registration. That's where you become an iFanboy member for $3 a month or $30 a year. Helps the show out directly, and that's really, you know, helps us out the best, and you are our favorite people who do that. All those details can be found at iFanboy.com/registration. Now, let's talk about more comics.
Yeah. Recently, we had somebody write in to the show asking about fantasy comics, And just so happens that a brand new fantasy comic just came out this week, Umbral number one, from Anthony Johnson and Christopher Mitten.
The team behind Wasteland. Yeah.
That's right.
Pony Press.
And
this was an image book?
Yeah, it's an image book. And this is beautiful. What I like about it is that I think there's a lot of fantasy out there right now that's sort of like trying to emulate. Well, there's obviously, that was the conversation we had with that question was, fantasy that's not urban fantasy, because that seems to be so much of the fantasy landscape right now. This feels like kind of like a 80s sort of Jim Henson kind of fantasy, or like Lady Hawk or something, like, you know, Dark Crystal or Labyrinth. And if you like those things, it's sort of a YA bent to it, but it's got, you know, got this great darkness to it. And it's about, there's sort of a royal family that gets murdered, and this girl named Rascal, who's a thief, who gets involved in that, and she knows some bearded people around town, and she's got this magic amulet around her neck, and there's these dark creatures coming through from like another dimension. Beautiful book. I've always liked Christopher Mitten's stuff. It was always great when he popped up in SketchUp, and so I think it's sort of perfect if you have a kid who's into fantasy, or if you miss that era of fantasy. So a really good start.
So who wrote that email in? Whoever wrote that email in before, check out Umbral, number one.
Yeah.
This week also, there was another number one called X-Men Gold, number one. I didn't know what it was. I was very curious.
Still don't know what it is.
I do know what it is now. Picked it up. It is the anniversary.
It's a 50th anniversary.
Celebrating the X-Men. It's been 50 years. Is Gold the 50-year thing? Is that what it is? Gold,
sure.
Gold present. So this it's a giant oversized issue celebrating the X-Men throughout the years. It was tons of fun. The main story was a Chris Claremont written story drawn by Bob McLeod. Then there was a Stan Lee written story drawn by Walter Simonson. Then there was a Roy Thomas story that was drawn by Pat Oliff. And then there was a Len Wein story drawn by Jorge Molina. And then a Fabian Nicieza story drawn by Salvador LaRocca. And then there was a little John Byrne pinup, obviously from an old comic. They didn't get a new one for Anna John Byrne. And a great cover by, what's his name? It's almost like I'm the one on drugs. The guy who did, oh, God.
Spit it out, man!
The guy who did the X-Men event from a few years ago. French name. Olivier Coipel. So,
okay.
It was really fun. Help.
So a lot. So those writers basically writing the X-Men sort of their time.
Right. So
I'll tell you something.
Yes.
Yeah.
For... I saw this, and I didn't read it, but I saw it, and I was like, all right, 1963, 2233, it's the 50th anniversary. It should be bigger than this.
Right.
It should be something else.
It should have been a bit more of a celebration. This was under the wire.
50 really. Years is like, they celebrate the dumbest, like the, remember it was like 65 years of Superman.
Right.
That's not any, that doesn't mean anything. Right. This is the 50th year of the X-Men. Do a thing.
Right.
This is a throwaway.
Right, it was a fun throw.
It's good or fun, yeah. But then again, what do I know?
There's other parts to it. This isn't, you know.
But it's also getting it under the wire. We're talking about there's a month and a half left of this year.
Well, yeah. You know, I'm guessing that what it is just one of those things like somebody noticed it, and they're in the midst of doing all their other things, which justify would keep them pretty busy. Like, we should probably do something for this. Yeah, so let's whip something up. But that seems most likely.
Story wise, I like the Len Wein story, where it's Wolverine sort of coming into the X-Men and then sizing everyone up and figuring
great.
Out
that was
if
like
he
a
can
Batman
kill.
Story.
Yeah, he's like, I would kill this guy, but Cyclops, I just pop him in the eye sockets.
Well, I think that'd kill him. He drives his claws into his skull.
Yeah, exactly.
But it was like, it was the first meeting of the new X-Men for the all-new X-Men special. So it was Wolverine surveying the room at all of his new teammates and deciding how he would kill them if he had to. It was really good issue. I liked all of them. Because I like all these different eras.
Now, you liked Rocket Girl 1 a lot. What did you think of 2? I decided not to.
I thought it was a tour de force for Amy Reeder. I think
really?
I think she's fantastic, and I thought this issue looked even better than the first one. And I really like the story. I feel like coming home again. It's 1986 New York. There's even an appearance by Geraldo Rivera doing the local news, and I think it's super fun. It's just
I think it's beautiful. I hadn't read the first one. I've always loved her covers. I have like a Supergirl print from her, but so seeing her on interiors, I was like, I want to see more of this. Like, this shouldn't be such a rarity.
Right.
I want to see more Amy Reeder. So,
did you read this one?
Yeah.
Did you read the first?
I was a little bit lost, but because I just read the second one.
Well,
so
you would have no idea what's going on.
Right. I want to go back and maybe
definitely
when it's
that.
Collected. Yeah, I will.
I thought it was gorgeous. I thought some of the close-ups on the main character were fantastic.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the funny thing about Superman Wonder Woman number 2 was that it sort of went into the world of Wonder Woman a bit. I mean, what I mean by that is the book world. You know, Wonder Woman, that series has always felt a little removed from the rest of the DCU. In this issue, we go and we see Apollo and we see Strife and all these characters, which felt a little uncomfortable. But I did really like the interaction between Superman and Apollo, and I love the backhand slap that sent Superman flying. That would have been a panel of the week had we still been doing that feature.
I thought that whole stuff was unexpected and pretty imaginative and well done. The one thing that is weird to me about it is that it feels a little like it's being written down. Like it doesn't it's being written for a slightly simpler audience. And some of the dialogue and some of the explanations and things like that, like it's. Like they're saying, maybe this is for people who've never read this stuff.
Compared to other Charles Soule books like the Wonder Woman book?
Other Charles Soule books and definitely Wonder Woman.
Yeah.
Just the thing
it's
I noticed.
It's a little odd seeing, you know, Apollo and Hephaestus and stuff like in that, what feels like, you know, a Geoff Johns style, like mainstream.
That doesn't bother me because, A, that's mostly has to do with the choice of the artist, I think. But, B, like we've seen Orion with her. We've seen that. So, like, we've made that connection. And she's Wonder Woman, so... That didn't bother me so much. The thing that I kept going back and forth on was I was like, so are the gods magic? Because if they're magic, they can't take him. But apparently the sun powers him.
Yeah, they could take him because he has a weakness to magic.
Yeah.
Right.
But I think it's a smart idea to, you know, put Apollo like thinking I'll use my amazing sun powers and Superman's like, nah, not such a good idea.
I like that confrontation. It was good.
Yeah.
It's, you know, I still don't know about this book, but I like
it. I mean, I think, we're not the audience for this book.
I'm not behind this relationship. I mean, that's one
strange
entry thing.
I'll give you that. It feels a little forced.
It feels to me like everything else that they've done is that it's an interesting idea that they haven't executed in any interesting way.
Mm-hmm.
Which I think you can say about most of what they've done in the New 52 is that the ideas were all good. They just, the execution was lacking. And I think... For me, there's nothing wrong at its core with them being in a relationship. I think if they're both young and attached, there's no reason why they wouldn't be.
Right. Oh, and you know, nobody got mad when they did this in Kingdom Come.
Right. But they just haven't done anything interesting with it. And that's, I think
that's early days. This is
issue
two.
But they've been quote unquote together for a long time now in Justice League books.
Yeah.
I just mean like in their own book, let it, you know.
Sure. I just mean in general they haven't done anything with it, which is part of the reason why this book isn't as compelling is because.
Mm-hmm.
Right now, the relationship is not compelling. So I think it transfers over, but that's just me. Could be wrong. Let's talk about Thor some more, because Thor is awesome.
Thor, God of Thunder, number 15. There's some of that like raw pencil stuff that we really liked about Esad Rubik. I don't think it's helping Garney out as much.
I was thinking that, too. I went back. I was like, is this still Garney? He's like, oh, it is.
Because I like Ron Garney, but it's, I don't know, it's not entirely working. But I enjoy that this is Thor and his sort of League of Nations.
Yeah.
From all the different nine realms.
The turning point for this issue, or at least the really great part about it, was the thing where he got everybody drunk together and like made it. And it was obvious what he was
doing.
Yeah,
they're in a gingerbread tavern.
It's like Team Building 101.
Yeah.
And that's cool. And Thor's not going to get drunk on fairy juice, you know? Like he's not going to let it happen, but it's happening. And I just like, he sort of got me. Well, he got me with the first page. Jason Aaron talking about Alfheim and, you know, instead of saying unicorns, he said corns with an apostrophe over the C, and then talking about the different kinds of elves. And of course, it's Jason Aaron's Alfheim, so there's going to be sexy elves in addition to just the boring old vanilla light elves. Dark elves. Yeah. The spice elves. So I love the imagination there. And I love the idea of a dwarf who's like, I've never killed somebody with a candy cane before. That was kind of cool. So
he does great world building. He really does.
Yeah. I really like the way he thinks about this stuff. And I love seeing that map in the back and looking at all these different realms. And
I like his combination of silly ideas and epic ideas.
He had a giant inadvertently eat Malekith, and then Malekith pops out of his skull.
Yeah.
I don't know exactly how he got into his head, but...
Well, he cut his way through.
But, like, the guy was talking a second before, so...
Well, I don't think he jumped into his mouth
and cut his way up. He came out through the eye.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. It's good. It's still very good.
This is basic stuff, Paul.
Okay.
I know that three number one, I hate saying these numbers, was a pick of the week, and I wanted to follow up on three number two. I feel like it should stop at three issues. I don't know what that is.
3-4.
I like to check in sometimes when a new series is number one, and then sometimes we don't revisit it. But I thought number two was sort of the other side of the bookend of what I really liked about number one. It was we spent a lot of time with the Helots in the first issue, and then in this one we're with the Spartans and sort of seeing what's going on over there. And the thing that I don't think we knew in the first one was that it's not going so well for the Spartans at this point. And I really enjoyed the look into that and what that means for this whole little world.
I liked it more than the first one. The problem I have with this is the same problem I have with the Legion of Superheroes and also Russian literature, is that I get tripped up with all the names, and because they're all like long and the constructions are not familiar. They're long and foreign. By foreign, I mean the way they're written. It's not like it's Francois. It's there's a lot of letters together that shouldn't be. And so I get lost with what people are talking about sometimes. But
I appreciate the level of research and the drive for authenticity. Like,
that didn't bother me. It reminds me of like when I used to read old Avengers comics. I didn't know everybody, and they talk about other characters and other things were happening. I just figure that'll either be something that I'll find context for, or I can look into, and it'll be fine, or it'll make sense to me later, or it won't. Then it won't matter. Mm-hmm. I get the same sort of effect.
He clearly loves
that.
I read the whole interview that he did with the professor, and Gillen is clearly really into this story, so that's nice.
It's pretty fascinating.
Yeah, I appreciate
it. The fall of the Spartan really added to, I was like, oh, I didn't know about any of this. So
very bizarre really political setup, but interesting, very interesting. I liked three. I liked it more than the first one. So those are the books that we wanted to talk about this week. Let's jump right into some audience questions. The first was from Sam from London, and Sam says, I've just finished The Amazing Essex County, having known about it for years based on your recommendations on the podcast. For some reason, the bigger the endorsement, the less inclined I am to pick up a book. Someone says, you must read this, and my first reaction is, F you, who made you king? This has delayed my picking up Watchmen, Understanding Comics, and Scalped, among others. I am, of course, an idiot. Not liking something that is critically acclaimed is one thing, but which comics have you been most wrong about, avoiding and avoiding until you caved and realizing you'd been missing out? I think Josh is this Captain America.
Was it?
I bought you the first two trades for Christmas because you wouldn't read it.
You're right, because I had gotten it mixed. But the thing is with that, I had gotten it mixed up with that other series that was like John A. Reber and right. Cassidy.
Right.
And I don't think I realized that they restarted it. I know I've got answers for this. I have this, whatever your affliction is. The one where everyone's like, this is great, and you're like, screw you. I have that.
Yeah.
I've got a lot of that in me.
Is that like what do you think that is?
It's like being iconoclastic. It's not wanting to be told. You want to make your own decision or whatever. It's a problem
for me.
I've gotten over it a lot.
It's snobbery.
You
for me?
No, it's not. There's a mix of snobbery in there.
Well,
because
something is widespread acclaim. Someone would think that it must not be good because the masses like it.
Yeah, but then again, why are you listening to our podcast? Because it's literally the point.
You know, like part of that, I mean, kept me away from like The Sopranos and like the Wire for a long time. And I'd had a million false starts with The Wire season one, and I love it now. For me, for comics, Preacher.
I did that on The Wire.
Preacher is the one where I was just like, it was part of it was just like feeling intimidated by all the acclaim, and then also just thinking that it wasn't going to be for me, like because I thought it was going to be all like gross out humor.
Had you read The Boys prior to that?
No.
Okay.
So it wasn't even based on that. It was just based on those covers. I was like, this looks like it's going to be gross. I'm not into that. And
I don't really like Fabry all that much. So right. I know what you're talking about.
I don't know that I avoid things based on recommendations. I just, for whatever stupid reason, I don't get to them. I don't tend to have that problem. But for me, books that I just kept putting off, finally read and loved, like Starman. And to a lesser extent, Sandman. But really, Starman is the one I remember because you, Josh, would constantly give me the trades to read whenever I came to visit you when we were right out of college. And I remember reading that first couple trades like three times.
Yeah.
And then finally, when we were going to do that show on it, the video show, the books started coming out, the hardcovers. I read them, and now it's one of my favorite comics of all time. So I think, but that wasn't because people liked it. It was just for whatever reason I didn't read it.
Yeah. Well, you know what? It really, like when I say that's happened to me. It's usually not because everyone says it's good, but it's because I think, well, you're saying you like that. Ron and I used to do this a lot. Like, Ron likes things a lot. and I don't always like the thing that he likes a lot. There's many examples of it, but there's also crossover. My best example of that is probably Young Avengers, where everyone was telling me to read that for a long time, and I was really not into that stuff at that point, and I just was like, no, I don't want to read that. And like, he made me read it, and I was like, you're right, that was awesome, Kang.
Right.
And what's his name? Jimmy Chung.
The problem with you is the marketing. We should have just led with Kang. we just approached the marketing wrong. That's all.
With Young Avengers, like, there's been good stuff since then, but they've never matched that sort of first series. Now what they're doing in Young Avengers is slightly different.
Yeah.
So it's okay, but.
So there you go. So those are some of the books we've avoided. Now let's jump to a voicemail.
Assembly! Hey, this is Sean from New York. I got a question for you guys about inspiration in comics. One of the big complaints I heard about Man of Steel was that it was not inspiring. What are some of the most inspiring comics that you've read, and what exactly do they inspire you to do? Love the show, guys.
I would say yes. Yeah, certainly. You left it kind of broad there, which is good because we get to sort of interpret that. However, I mean, the number one thing is you read something that's really inspiring in that sense. It makes you know, the first thing it makes you want to do is think about, you know, making comics like that. But also, that reading really great comics that are like creatively inspiring makes you want to read others like it, and that can sometimes be disappointing. I remember last year I read A Tale of Sand, and I was like, that was amazing, and I couldn't match that feeling for a long time, which I think until recently, like we just read The Fifth Beatle, I think that was a similar feeling. Or when you read something just great, like Darwin Cook's Parker book or something like that, it immediately makes you want to read something else that's really good like that, because you want to keep that feeling going, which is sometimes really hard to capture.
Chasing that dragon.
Yeah, I mean, it'll make me go back and read Preacher or something like that. That's sort of what it ends up doing.
I think there's two different ways to look at the question. And I figured we would get into that, where it's like inspire you to create something similar or just like really good craft. And that makes it sort of contagious. But then I think sort of the kernel of the question is Superman isn't very inspiring in the movie, which I agree with. Is there a comic that inspires you to be a better person? I think that's the question. Like, is there a book that makes you, I don't know, want to be more, you know, politically aware or socially conscious, that kind of thing, to be more heroic, or just gives you that feeling of goosebumps when you're reading it?
I think New Frontier falls in the last category for me. It's, mm-hmm. It makes me feel like, you know, the world is full of good people and there are people who will do good things, and, you know, it ends on that high note of people persevering over adversity. And it also has that classic feel to it.
It's really triumphant.
But there's even books like, you know, Pedro and Me, which doesn't end on a triumphant note, certainly, but it does leave you with a feeling of sort of being inspired by people. And this is real people.
I agree with that. I think that's a really good one. And I just read, what's the John Lewis book?
March.
Yeah, The March, yeah. Which was, I know you guys talked about it on the show that I wasn't on. That was so good. And it was inspiring that, you know, that guy is an amazing guy. Or even, you know, to go a completely different direction. We've been talking about Preacher, but I you know, the character of Jesse Custer is like this. It's like this template of one kind of person who's a good man. Mm-hmm. You know, like he does right by his friends. He does the right thing, no matter the cost. And I find that incredibly inspiring. And I know that that's a weird book to say that about, but
but it's not. That's what the core of that book is, which is why people like
and
Paul, who thought it was going to be one thing, realized it's actually another thing.
No, I was totally wrong.
I find that when I write stuff, like I have certain themes that I tend to go back to, and one of the things is always like the really good friend.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Like I always like to have a character like that, and I have to try to stay away from it. But like that book is a template for me. On, like, you know, Cassidy was not a good friend, but Jesse still was because it meant something to him. So that kind of thing is still super important.
I think if you're just talking about the superheroes, like I think back on the early Jeff Johns, Justice Society of America, and like the Citizen Steel issue, and that's all about his family, and it's like the ending image of that is Citizen Steel sort of like, you know, crumpled on the floor, all of these very young relatives, they're the only surviving family he has, all of the adult family has sort of been killed by Nazi speedsters. It's getting ridiculous the more you talk about it, but like the moment is they all sort of like gather around him and embrace him, and he's just learning how to be a hero, and it's moments like that, like, you know, recognizing friendship and what matters and family and things like that. Those are the moments that I get, you know, that get the goosebumps when I'm reading the books. Similar thing with Geoff Johns on it's Superman and the Legion of Superheroes, yeah, from his Action Comics run. It's sort of like there's a point where Superman is in the future and there's no sun to sort of power him. There's no yellow sun, so he has to rely on his friends in the Legion of Superheroes to sort of rally around him. And but then it also makes him a better sort of tactician because he's not, you know, invulnerable, and he has to think about it in that way, and he's a better leader and working in a group. So it's those kind of things.
Anytime you can find a, you know, it's an underdog story, and it's hard to pick one out because there's so many of them. You know, the people rally to stop the bad guy, the people with no powers or whatever, and or the civilians, but I always think of the moment in Infinity Gauntlet when Captain America is the last man standing against Thanos. You know, all the other people are dead, and he's the only one left, and Thanos is like, what are you going to do? You're just one man without any special powers. And, you know, Cap gives him that speech about, as long as there's one man standing against you, you haven't won. And that's a really great moment.
That's a great
moment. Remender picked up on that a little, because, you know, you just stand up kind of thing. I think we actually just talked about Starman a little bit, too. These questions are related, but I really like the, when you know what happens in the story and you can watch what Jack is in the beginning to what he is in the end, and the way that his relationship with his father develops and how he learns to appreciate him, and then, you know, at the end he becomes a father too. Like I find that really touching.
Well, I think the point is
it's big.
Yeah, I think the point is that there's lots of different ways to be inspired by a comic. You know, you can be inspired to, that there's good in the world. You can be inspired to make your own comics. You can be inspired on a human level. You can be inspired on a father-son level. There's lots of different ways, and I think there's lots of great comics out there to do that. So thank you for your question, Sean. That was a good one. You can email us at contact@ifanboy.com, and you can call our voicemail line at 888-FANBOYS, which is 326-2697, if you have, you want to have your question answered on the show. And let's give another plug, Paul, to our Thor podcast, our special edition Thor the Dark World show, which we put out last Friday to go along with the movie when Paul and I
discussed. That was a Yabba Dabba Doo time.
I saw it again the day after we did that show, and it was just as much fun the second time.
Yeah, I'm gonna see it tomorrow. I'm excited.
In fact, I picked up on more things the second time than I did the first time, but we won't talk about them here because Josh has not seen it. But great movie, and I had really fun doing that show with Paul. I think it was really fun. So if you haven't listened yet, give it a listen. Go to thefanboy.com and tell us what you thought of the movie underneath that podcast.
For more of me yammering about Thor, I also did a longer podcast with Dave Ocampo and Ali Coluccio, who you may remember from iFanboy.com, over at Fuzzy Typewriter. So you can look up Fuzzy Typewriter or Fuzzy Typewriter Show, or it's FuzzyTypewriter.com. So check that out. We're finally going to do that 12 Angry Men show. And Cheers. We're going through season by season of Cheers.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yep.
Wow.
Brett has been.
I think Connor and I both simultaneously thought the same thing, and it was I can never do that. And two, that's cool.
Well, yeah. we're sort of picking like the three or four key episodes from each season and zeroing in on those. So we're going to talk about the pilot. We're going to talk about the season finale.
You know, before they had a DVD, you couldn't do a thing like that.
No. Well, Netflix. There's no excuse. You got to check it out. So there is that. And also, speaking of Brett, I was on Matt and Brett Love Comics talking about Walt Simonson's The Mighty Thor, 344 through 349, the first appearance of Malekith. So that's finally out. That wasn't out last week, so you can check that out now.
All right, you can head over to ifanboy.com. You can comment on this show, talk about the books of the week, talk about what you liked or didn't like or what you loved. Give us your thoughts on the new X-Men costumes. We cannot be wrong here. In fact, I've seen no support for them other than Paul's half-hearted support earlier, which really makes me question our entire relationship.
Paul just wanted to like the rest of the book without having to think about that. And I can respect
that. That's kind of what happened, yeah.
Denial. It was like, I'm going to ignore that. I'm going to cover my eyes.
Maybe
up.
They will get a Voltron.
Listen, if it all ends up in the Voltron, I take it all back. I will take it all back.
This is what I'm going to say.
Yes. I will admit I'm wrong if it ends up forming Voltron and defending the universe.
Like, if they just take like Sentinel parts and like build their own Voltron, that'd be kind of dope.
And I'll form the head. Go to fanboy.com. No, go to twitter.com/ifanboy. I was going to say fanboy.com/Twitter, which would be crazy.
Iceman is Pidge.
Facebook.com/ifanboy to follow the action, which lets you in on what the pick's going to be before we do the show. And there's always somebody who says, what? What do you mean that was the pick? That's what you get when you don't get to explain it with 1,000 words.
Yeah.
There you go. Deal with it.
Josh.
Yeah. Okay.
Druggy.
I love you guys. You can keep telling my wife. I'm like, I really appreciate
it. I love all three of you guys.
Yeah. You can email us at contact@fanboy.com. You can leave a voicemail at 888-FANBOYS, which is 326-2697. And if you do that, you do well, you get a conversation like we just had, which I think we enjoyed. And by us enjoying, I think you will enjoy it. And then you will also have conversations based on that. And
it's a circle of
that's
life.
How we wanted to win. Yep, there it is.
It's the Wheel of Fortune.
If you dig this sort of thing, or you have your own kidney stone stories to tell, you can write us a review in iTunes.
Clink, clink. There they are.
Or better yet, tell your friends about us. Introduce your mom to podcast. Spread that iFanboy all around.
You're a trooper, Josh.
Really? They want me to pee into a coffee filter.
Really?
Yeah, and I got to tell you that it's kind of difficult to make that work, especially if it starts getting full. What do I do?
Are you going to keep them?
No, you bring them back so the doctors can
test it,
examine them. They understand what they're made of. They're made of calcium. That means.
But after that, are you going to make like a pendant?
I'm probably going to I'll put them under my pillow and see if I can get some cash out of this. Try to pay my bills.
There's nothing good about this scenario. You know, sometimes it's good to get sick because you get like ice cream. You get to watch talk shows during the day. No, there's nothing good about a kidney stone.
No.
Nothing.
So is this going to be something that keeps happening? Could be. Is there anything I can do to stop it? Maybe. Well, all right. Thanks a lot. I really appreciated this talk.
Here's your bill for $1,000. So until next week, I'm Connor.
I'm Paul.
Oh.
he's in pain.
No. Okay.
Tender.
Nick, goodbye.
This episode is brought to you by BetterHelp. How's your social battery doing right now? I've never used that phrase, but I instantly know what it means, and I think it's interesting because it works two different ways. Some people need to have their social battery charged, and they this is the introvert-extrovert thing, and some people, you know, like they've got enough energy for other people, but then it's time to sort of step away, and you know, as we get to this part where winter is ending, which again, it's opposite. I love winter. I don't need it to end. You know, you start getting together with more people and it can be a little draining on top of every other thing that we all have going on in our lives. I just assume everybody's overburdened because I think everybody's overburdened, but it can be tough to deal with. And also one of the things is like, you can't necessarily understand why you feel that way or why it's making you tired, but it's a real thing. If you think that you could use some help with it, if you could figure out a way to make things better, therapy is a great way to help. It can give you that kind of self-awareness to know how to ride that level just right so that you feel good, you feel right. If you're thinking of starting therapy, you can give BetterHelp a try. It is entirely online. It is designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule, which is, again, we've been talking about being busy, right? You got to fit that in. You got a lunch period. You can do it during that time, whichever. That's possible. You fill out a brief questionnaire and get matched with a licensed therapist. You can switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. I like that. There is no penalty for finding the person who is right for you. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/iFanboy today. Get 10% off of your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.com/iFanboy.